Good morning, everyone. This is Amy Lemley. Welcome to today's web seminar. It's just a few minutes after 10. I think we'll wait just one more minute and then we will get started. So thank you very much for your patience. Welcome to today's web seminar, THP Plus and THP Plus Foster Care, a report on 12 months of change and growth. We are excited to say that we have a great representation of the THP Plus and THP Plus Foster Care community online today, a lot of providers as well as county administrators. My name is Simone Turek, and I'm a policy associate at the John Burton Foundation. And before we get started, I just would like to, fix a technical difficulty here. There's an echo. Okay. So before we get started, we'd just like to remind everyone that using your telephone to call in provides a much better sound and less chance of technical difficulties than using your computer speakers. So if you are using your speakers, we suggest trying switching to calling in. We'll be taking questions throughout the presentation, and we may answer them on the spot, or we may choose to hold them for Q&A. But either way, I strongly suggest submitting them while they're fresh in your mind. And you can do that by clicking on the questions panel, typing your questions, and you can just click send, and they'll come straight to us. And then lastly, as always, we record these webinars, and we promise to post a copy along with the PowerPoint on the THP Plus website, and the annual report will also be there. So today, Amy Lemley, our policy director at the John Burton Foundation, along with myself, Simone Turek, will be presenting. Let's get started. So today's webinar will be reviewing the major findings of our most recent annual report. As many of you are aware, this will be the seventh year the John Burton Foundation has produced an annual report on THP Plus. And this started before my time here. I joined the team in 2009. But I can tell you, and I think Amy agrees, that this annual report is pretty drastically different than any other report we've done on THP Plus. This is the first year that we are including demographic data about THP Plus foster care, obviously because this is the first year it has been available. And we are also going to talk about how 2011 realignment is impacting the provision of THP Plus. Of course, and always, as always, we discuss numbers served and outcomes from THP Plus. And as I mentioned, the annual report is available on the THP Plus website for download, www.thpplus.org. You can see it on your screen there. And we'll also be printing it out and sending a copy to all providers and all county contacts. So I want to talk briefly about where we got the data for this year's report. We used four sources, and you know, the most kind of the largest kind of collection of data that we've ever used for an annual report before. As you see on the screen, first, as always, we conducted a survey of all THP Plus providers. And this year, we also surveyed THP Plus foster care providers, and we asked them about numbers served, capacity, housing models, rate, and qualitative information about provision of services over the past fiscal year. And then there was, you know, there was that 100% response rate from THP Plus providers, which we're really, really pleased with and just really appreciate the cooperation of providers in giving us that data and that information, because it really makes the report inclusive of a, you know, a truly statewide representation of the program. After surveying the providers, we loop back with the counties and ask them to verify numbers and for any qualitative information about provision of services on their end. We also pull outcomes data from the THP Plus participant tracking system, which represents the majority of the statewide THP Plus housing capacity. And if you'd like more information about the participant tracking system, please do follow up with me after the presentation or visit the THP Plus website. Third, we needed data on THP Plus foster care. So we turned to the California Child Welfare Indicators Project, which is a collaboration between UC Berkeley and the California Department of Social Services. And it's where all of the child welfare services case management system data is housed and accessible. It's a pretty amazing system. And lastly, we worked off all county letters and county fiscal letters from CDSS for this section, particularly on realignment. Now, I would like to just kind of discuss the order of our webinar here. First, we're going to talk about THP Plus. Then we'll talk about THP Plus foster care, and then we'll kind of talk about some of the conclusions and implications for both programs together. And so at this point, I'm going to turn it over to Amy, who's going to cover THP Plus. And for those of you who don't know, Amy's relationship with THP Plus goes way back, even before her time here at John Burton Foundation. So Amy, turning it over to you.
Thanks, Simone. I'm feeling a little old with that comment, frankly, but I guess I truly am aging like everyone else, right? No, I'm just teasing. So again, I want to join with Simone in thanking everyone for being on the webinar and really reiterating, you know, this report would not be possible without the counties and the providers and the state representatives and you name it. I mean, we really ask people for a lot of information, and you take the time to provide it, so thank you. So the first thing we're going to look at is the program. And as you can see from this slide, you know, the program, in terms of the number of counties that are implementing it, had a big jump in 06-07 to 07-08. Not surprisingly, that's when the county share of cost was removed, if we all remember that wonderful day. And then we really got up to the 46-50, 51-50-50, and then we're still at 50. So that we did not have any counties opting out of THP Plus this year. In terms of the provider and program growth on the right-hand side of the screen, you'll see we've pretty much remained the same there. We have, and just let me explain what those numbers are. The bottom number is the number of unique providers, the unique nonprofit entities, and the 81 figure is the number of individual contracts these providers have with counties. So the vast majority of counties have one provider they contract with. And then there's a select number of counties, not surprisingly, the bigger counties that have multiple contracts. And so, again, we had a, you know, what you can really see here is we did between 09-10 and 10-11, there was a slight budget reduction there, and you'll see that kind of ripple through all of the facts and figures today. And then on the bottom part of the screen, I do want to just point out that we do have 8 counties that do not have a THP Plus program: Amador, Colusa, Modoc, Mono, San Benito, Sierra, Siskiyou. And so these counties do not have a THP Plus program, but in a little bit of a foreshadowing to what we're going to talk about later, they do actually have a THP Plus allocation. So let's go to the next slide here. And what we are looking at is, again, this is what the program looks like out in the field. That top bar, that yellow bar, is our host family model. It's almost frightening how consistent that is across the years. It's the providers and the counties who implement it love it, but it has never been a widespread model. But those that do it really are very committed to it. The most popular model, as we've had in the past, is the scattered site. It's always, except for 1 year, that 07-08, been pretty much two-thirds of the capacity. And then the bottom bar is the single-site model, which, again, about 1 in 5 beds is a single-site model. And this is pretty consistent across the state. We looked at it in terms of do we see a bunch of single-site in Southern California and scattered site in Northern California. We really see that each of the models is utilized pretty consistently in different parts of the state, you know, but it is nice to have the different models to reflect the different, you know, housing realities in the region. And now let's look at the rate that's been paid historically. So here we have the rate by model. So this is the amount of rate paid per youth per month. And that top bar is the single site model. And that has always been the model that has the highest rate. So when you look at the three lines, the 2,570 is the single site average rate. The 2,235 is the scattered site. And then the lowest rate is the host family model. And again, these have been really quite consistent. What we're seeing this year is negligible changes. The change from last year to this year on average for the single site is not even a percent. For the scattered site, it's around 2%, you know, very negligible. And we're encouraged by that. If we would have seen big drop-offs here, I think that would have raised alarm bells, but we're not seeing any big drop-offs here. We're seeing it quite historically consistent, and that, I think, is a good sign. So let's kind of turn our attention from the program structure to what we all really care the most about, which is who are the young people in the program. And here on the left-hand side of the screen, you're going to see how many young people are served over a 12-month period. So when we survey providers, we want to know, you know, over 12 months, how many young people have you served? And there you can see that in the fiscal year 2012-2013, 2,059 young people were served in THP+. A small reduction from the previous year. Not anything too concerning. What you can really see from 08 to 09 to 09, 010 was a budget reduction that year, and you can also see that reflected in the number of in the housing capacity. But, you know, relatively a small negative trending downwards, but nothing, again, that raises big alarm bells. And on the right-hand side of the screen is the housing capacity. And so that what that is a moment-in-time snapshot. If you were on July 1st, 2013, able to look at all, you know, 81 programs statewide, you'd find 1,351 young people in the program. And so for those of you who are program managers or program people out there, you can see, you know, with 2,059 young people being served over 12 months, and in any moment in time, 1,351 young people being served, each slot is occupied by about 1.5 young people per year. So we're looking at about a 50% turnover in the program, which, you know, and we've known this for some time, that the average length of stay is not 24 months. It is shorter than that. But again, this has remained pretty consistent over time. And so while young people can remain in the program for 2 years, we know from the data that most young people do not. So let's look at who the young people are. We've consistently, over time, had seen the program utilized by more young women than young men. For now, I'm going to skip the age and look at the other demographics. Pretty consistent number of young people self-identifying as LGBTQ. And the racial profile also pretty consistent across the board. We saw a little bit of a downward tick in the number of ILP eligible probation wards as minors, so young people utilizing THP plus from the juvenile probation system. And, you know, don't have a very strong explanation for that, but we're going to follow up with some of the providers that have traditionally served that constituency and see if we can, you know, get some working hypotheses for that small reduction. But, you know, by and large, again, the demographics of this program have been very consistent. From here, from the consistency, I'm going to contradict myself, and I'm going to start to talk about three very significant changes we've seen this year. And I think it's interesting for a lot of different reasons. The number one biggest change we saw this year is in this next slide, and that is participant age. So you can see from 06 to, you know, over to 2011, we're ticking along at pretty much 75 to 80% of the young people in the program being younger youth, 18 to 20. And then you see in this current year, it's a sharp reduction down to 52%. Well, and then you see that big uptick from 31% of young people being 21 to 24 all the way up to 48%. So we're pretty much almost 50-50% in the program with a few percentage points difference, equal numbers of young adults and older young adults, for lack of a better term. And, you know, those of us on the call, we all know what that's about. That is about the implementation of extended foster care. So we're really seeing this program serving more older youth. Instead of capturing those young people who exited care when they were 18, we are now serving, half the young people we're serving are over age 20. And so that's interesting to know, and it has specific kind of implications as we serve these young people. And it has these implications because they're different. They're different than younger young adults. And one way they're different is they're more likely to have children, partially because they've been on the planet for a longer amount of time, and they've had more time to simply reproduce. 18 to 21 is a time when a lot of people in the world have their first child, and youth in foster care aren't any different. And so what you can see with this next slide is in 2011, about 1 in 3 young women in THP Plus had custody of a child. And that has been, again, very consistent through the years. But in 2012, we saw a 25% increase to 40%. So again, we're seeing an older age profile. We're seeing, pretty much 2 out of 5 young women in the program having custody of at least one child. So that is a significant difference. And for service providers who are used to serving an 18-year-old who doesn't have a kid, who now has a program with a 22-year-old who might have one kid and another kid on the way, this is a change. This is different. This is different people with different needs. So we have to make sure we're looking anew at our individual programs to make sure that we are meeting their needs, which, frankly, are getting much more complex. Now let's look at where the young people are coming from. In the past, about 1 in 3 young people entered THP Plus directly from foster care. A social worker made a referral. They linked up with their THP Plus program, and they went from, let's say, a group home or a foster family home directly into THP Plus. We saw a big change this year. That experience is very rare at this point. Just about 1 in 7, or 14% of young people, are transitioning directly from foster care. And again, this is reflecting this larger demographic change of young people in the program who are older. And so we just had about 14% came directly from foster care into THP Plus. We also look at, through the participant tracking system, are they entering from homelessness? And we've always had a troubling and consistent amount of young people who enter the program directly from homelessness. But really, this 18% in some ways overrepresents it. In the past, it's vacillated between 13 and 18%. This year, it took a notable step in the other direction, with 1 in 4 young people entering THP Plus directly from homelessness. And so you can really see for the 2012-2013 fiscal year, you got more young people entering the program from homelessness than you do from foster care. And as all of us know who have worked with homeless youth, hard and challenging things happen when young people are homeless. And they can become victimized very quickly. The homeless experience can be a very traumatic one. And so, again, if you have 1 in 4 young people entering your program from that volatile state, it's speaking to a more complex set of needs. We also look at whether, not just are they coming directly from homelessness, but have they experienced any homelessness between foster care. And again, as with these other markers, we are pretty much ticking along, 34, 35, 36. And then this year, with the older age profile, we went all the way up to 50%. So if you statewide drew a young person out of THP Plus, half of them will have experienced homelessness before. You know, so if we ever had any question about whether THP Plus was a program targeting homelessness, I think we see it here now more than ever. So we were very curious given this. We've got more parents, we've got older youth, we've got more youth coming directly from homelessness, and we have more youth having experienced homelessness prior to entering. And so we had very big questions when how this was going to impact outcomes. And we were encouraged because the program, despite this more challenging group, really did make movement in the areas of education and employment. For those of you who participated in this in the past, we've always seen stronger outcomes in the employment arena in THP Plus and education. And we probably have a whole philosophical conversation about that. But that traditionally has been the strength of the program. It has traditionally been more of a work-first program. And we see those outcomes a little bit here. The number who, when moved from entrance to exit, who had earned a high school diploma, GED, or an equivalent, that increased somewhat. The number who were employed, that's a bigger difference. And then the average non-zero monthly earning, you can see the increase there. So we're pleased to see that despite the fact that the program in the last 12 months did serve young people with more complex needs, we didn't see a drop-off of outcomes. And I think that is a real feather in the cap for every person on this call, regardless of where you physically sit, that you continue to be so committed to these young people and go above and beyond to meet their needs, because their needs were complex in the first place, and in the last year, they've gotten even more complex. So let's look at housing. So in housing, we've also seen actually a slight improvement in the number who are exiting THP Plus to rent their own or shared housing. So in the 11-12 fiscal year, 41% exited to what we would think of as kind of a real rental housing setting where they are paying rent to live somewhere. And 6%, unfortunately, you know, despite the time they had in the program, there was really no viable transition identified for them, and they exited into homelessness. Unfortunately, the 6% remains consistent. We would have liked to see that reduced. But the number who are exiting to a more kind of durable housing setting has increased slightly. But when you really think about the increase in the number of parents, the fact that we even held the line on that metric, I think, is notable. So let's turn to realignment, because this was, again, the first year. I mean, realignment has been around since 2011, but it's kind of like waking up. It's like as the sun rises, you see it a little bit more. And the first year of realignment, you know, I don't know, we were all just kind of trying to wrap our heads around it. And now I think that process continues, but it's in much more earnest. And so we talked to a lot of different providers and county representatives and tried to suss out what exactly, if any, is the effect and how can we think about that. So let's go there. So statewide, we have seen what I would call a marginal reduction in THP Plus capacity. It's statewide only 2.5%. But as we all know in California, the state is the state and counties are counties. We have 58 counties who have a THP Plus allocation. We have 50 counties that are operating a THP Plus program. And so this state level data in some ways masks what's going on in individual counties. We have some counties that are increasing service levels, which is exciting. And, you know, we need to do kind of more investigation into why that makes sense to them, so that they can, you know, be ambassadors perhaps to other places who are not thinking the same thing. And then some counties are reducing their service levels more than others. And we do have, you know, circumstances where, you know, based on our analysis, they are reducing them below the 10% threshold, whether intentionally or unintentionally. So, you know, we're not going to play a game of gotcha here. What we want to do instead is work with providers and counties and the state to understand when that's occurring, where that's occurring, Is it an intentional policy decision? Is it a lack of understanding about the state level requirement that the Board of Supervisors meeting must occur prior to that type of decision being made? And so that's the work ahead of us, is all working together to understand where that's happening and why that's happening, and if it's happening under the circumstances that have been laid out by the state. But again, we do know at least those select number of counties that I referenced earlier have a THP plus allocation and yet have no program. And so that certainly would be a first step to look into as we think about realignment. So here are some findings. Again, we had a lot of conversations about realignment. And unlike the data that I've presented prior, which is, you know, hard facts, figures, statistically significant, you know, these are impressions. These are comments that we heard that surfaced to the top. And so I just want to, you know, characterize them as this. The first one is, you know, we have a wonderful group of counties statewide who are completely and totally dedicated to this program. And yet when we talk to those counties, even those highly, highly supportive counties really acknowledge that under realignment, there is a powerful financial incentive to reduce or eliminate the program. And the reason for that, as you all know it, is that the county is able to redirect these funds to another child welfare-related activity without losing the funding. So imagine you're a county who wants to direct it to a activity that has a federal share of cost, a federal match. You're taking $1 of THP plus, and you're making it $2 of some other 4E reimbursable activity. And that is very attractive. And so that's just, you know, it is what it is. And it's acknowledged, and it's something we should all, you know, be mindful of. The second thing we heard over and over again is there is a very real perception that THP plus may not be necessary, not just due to the implementation of THP plus foster care, but really extended foster care generally. You know, do they really need it? Will they really need it at age 21? And what we heard from a lot of providers is that they have capacity right now that's not being used. We've heard from providers, we aren't getting the referrals. We've got 6 beds open right now. And the question that we tried to delve into is that because there is not a need, or is that because many providers are used to getting youth at age 18, youth that are now extending to 21 and will, you know, very likely need housing at 21. But there's a little bit of a gully right now in the referral process. We heard that over and over again. And most providers do not have as rigorous outreach process for 21 to 24-year-olds. So kind of the low-hanging fruit, if I can, you know, use that phrase, are the young people straight out of care. They're choosing to extend. So in some ways, the referral pipeline has dried up during this period of time until the first cohort of young people become age 21, when I think we will see it kind of go on. The challenge here is how to not confuse those lack of referrals with lack of need. So I'm just going to stop there, but I just want to, that's something we definitely heard a lot of. Another thing we heard a lot of is the state has put together it's well done kind of dashboard around realignment. They heard the concern about that we're worried that there's going to be county level disinvestment. And they have an interactive worksheet where you can look at these kind of discretionary, formerly state only funded programs, and you can see how much was spent on them before and how much is spent on them today. However, it lags by at least 3, if not 6 months. And so the process is a very good one, but is not a timely one for local stakeholders about county-level changes. So if you're wondering if your county is making a policy decision to reduce its capacity, you'll hear that will be reflected in the state report in 3 to 6 months, likely after the decision has been made and you cannot impact it. And I don't think that's anyone's fault, per se. It's just the nature of the beast. I think it's very important that the state report still exists, but I guess I'm raising that and telling you if you want to play a more active role in that conversation, you're going to have to be involved more on the front end. We also heard that this requirement in state law to reduce THP plus is not commonly known among county representatives and providers. We kind of heard that quite a bit, that this is a change, and what is it, and can't we just do it as part of our budgeting process, and what does it mean that it has to be before a publicly noticed meeting the Board of Supervisors, and what does it mean if we just don't spend all of our budget 1 year and then we, you know, we just make that the budget for next year? There's definitely some conversations that need to happen on the local level so people understand this requirement and they know what triggers it, and that's pretty much that. And then last, there still is a little bit of confusion about 2011 realignment. We still hear, we still get calls, and we still have conversations with providers who are waiting for the state allocation, which, you know, shall never come. I mean, that is a pre-realignment era. And so there is still confusion about the process, confusion about the funds at the local level, and there's definitely a little bit of a confusion about how do I play a constructive role in this conversation. I think it's confusion and a little worry that, that the boat might sail. And I think any, and I would say almost every county has this, there's relationships. You know, these are, it's all about relationships and all about you know, having ongoing active conversation. And if that's in place, no one is going to be no one's going to be caught by surprise. So those were some of the main themes that we heard in all of our interviews. We're going to be doing a lot of work on this in the upcoming fiscal year in a very targeted and specific way. And from here, I'm going to turn it over to Simone, who is going to discuss THP Plus foster care.
Thanks, Amy. We're just handling some mouse control issues here. All right. And we're clear. Okay, so we're moving on to THP Plus foster care. And as we mentioned before, this is the first year we've included information about THP Plus foster care in the annual report. First, I just want to talk a little bit about the THP Plus foster care participants. Then I will talk about the providers. So THP Plus foster care first became available in October of last year, so October of 2012. That was when the first provider, which was Sunny Hills Bay Area Youth Centers, became licensed and accepted their first youth. Since then, we've seen the numbers of youth entering THP Plus foster care programs grow at a steady pace. And what we're going to talk about today is just, you know, fiscal year 2012-13. So obviously, since July, we've seen these numbers continue to grow and the number of providers continue to grow, but we're just talking about this past fiscal year. So these first two numbers for January and April were pulled from CWS CMS data, but the final number you see in July actually came from our survey of THP Plus foster care providers and represents the number of non-minor dependents, which is what we refer to as the 18 and over youth in foster care, in placement at that moment in time, so on June 30th of 2013. And until this week, actually, the final quarter of the last fiscal year data was not available in the CWS CMS, so that's why we took this final number from instead our survey. But we are really pleased and relieved to say that when we compared our number that we had from the survey to the data in the CWS CMS system, it was only off by, what was it, Amy, I think 7 youth, which is, if you, you know, or do anything related to data, you know that's a pretty good, that's a pretty accurate number. And, you know, this actually makes sense because I think I mentioned earlier I did have a 100% response rate from THP Plus providers, but I did, in fact, miss one THP Plus foster care provider's youth because I wasn't able to get in touch with them. But those 7 youth obviously were with that provider, so pretty close. And when you compare the number of THP Plus foster care youth to the number of non-minor dependents as a whole in foster care in the state, you see that THP plus foster care is only housing a very small percentage of youth in extended foster care, less than 5%. And, you know, this is, just to be clear, this is not due to a lack of popularity amongst youth of THP plus foster care, but more that it's just not as available across the state as other placements. You can see that, you know, the SILP, the Supervised Independent Living Placement, which was the other new placement option that became available under AB 12, is the most common placement. And, you know, there's no provider involved with the SILP. So there's no issue of availability. There's just the youth and basically the county social worker working together on that placement. So there's no middleman. There's no provider providing services. So there was no, you know, licensing process or anything to get that placement up and running. And then we expect to see THP plus foster care obviously grow as more providers become licensed and begin to serve youth. So that's, you know, that's promising, and we'll see next year just how much the program's grown. So, oops, can you click back on the PowerPoint? Thank you. Oh, there we go. Okay, I think I'm good now. So who's being placed in THP plus foster care? Or should I say, who's choosing to participate in THP plus foster care? As we know, THP plus foster care was modeled after THP plus and provides supportive services. It provides less supervision than a foster home, but more supervision and support than a SILP. So who's, Amy, can you click on the, sorry guys, we're having a little difficulty here. Okay. So who's accessing the placement? So you see that the youth that it was intended for are accessing the placement. Higher needs youth who may not be ready or developmentally prepared for a SILP, but who have the option for a, but who do not have the option for a foster home or do not want to reside in a foster home, are being placed there. So, for example, higher needs youth, custodial parents, current former wards of the court. You know, there was recently a Chapin Hall put out a little inside the research piece that pulled some interesting points out of the Midwest evaluation of the adult functioning of former foster youth, and it was basically on the predictors of homelessness during the transition from foster care to adulthood. And one thing that they found was that with every, I think it was every, you know, additional delinquent behavior, homelessness, the risk of homelessness went up. So you think about who is more at risk of things like homelessness. That's going to be youth that have been involved with the juvenile probation system. It's going to be custodial parents. And just to be clear here, so current and former wards of the court, who that's referring to is youth who were either formally on probation and who are now what we call transition jurisdiction status or 602, or youth who are currently on probation and had an order for a foster care placement on their 18th birthday. So who else is accessing THP plus foster care? We see that not dissimilar to THP plus, females are accessing THP plus foster care much more than males. You see 61% compared to 39%. And then finally, the ethnicity of THP plus foster care participants, interestingly, does not mirror that of foster care in general. We know that certain ethnic groups are overrepresented or underrepresented in foster care compared to the general population, but also it's interesting when you look at the THP plus foster care population compared to the general foster care population, we see that, you know, there's a greater percentage of THP plus foster care participants that are African American and a smaller percentage of THP plus foster care participants that are Latino. And this is interesting because, you know, you already know that within foster care that these ethnic groups are overrepresented compared to the general population. So then to see an overrepresentation or underrepresentation in this specific placement, we don't know what that's about. Again, it's something that we'd have to look into a bit further to make any hypotheses about, but definitely an interesting finding. So now we are going to look at housing model. These housing models, as most of you know, are very similar to the THP plus housing models. The host family model is essentially identical. The youth lives with a former foster parent, another adult who they're acquainted with, or someone who's identified by the provider. The remote site is actually the exact same model as the scattered site in THP Plus. So, you know, a provider leases individual units, sometimes in clusters, sometimes not. And the youth, you know, usually live with a roommate in an apartment. And then the single site is very similar to the THP Plus single site, except for THP Plus foster care, there's a requirement that a staff member reside on site. So it's, there's a little more supervision with THP Plus foster care single sites than THP Plus single sites. And this is just where, you know, there's one centrally located housing structure, like an apartment building, where all the units are located. And like THP Plus, the scattered site or the remote site is the most prevalent model. So now I'd like to talk a little bit about the providers. As I mentioned, we started in October of last year with one provider. And during the fiscal year, this number grew to 25. And once a provider receives a license and a rate, they can open their doors, but this doesn't always happen immediately. So as you can see, only 16 of the 25 providers actually served youth over the past fiscal year. And just a little side note, which we were very happy about, 76% of the providers that became licensed during that fiscal year were either current or former THP Plus providers. So we thought that was great because we know that THP Plus providers know how to work with this population of transition age youth. They may be new to the foster care system, but they're not new to the youth, and that's the really important piece of providing services. So THP Plus foster care availability really ranged across the state over this first or over this past fiscal year. And as of the end of the fiscal year, there were programs in about 36% of our state's counties, 21 counties. But we know that the number of foster youth varies a lot from county to county. So to get a better idea of how available this placement was to foster youth statewide, we looked at the 10 counties who have the highest number of non-minor dependents in placement. And of those counties, there were only three that did not have a THP Plus foster care program over fiscal year 2012-13. And just to clarify, since then, I believe that two of those counties have, you know, have a provider and housing located there. And the third is currently working on it. But during this past fiscal year, those three, Sacramento, San Bernardino, and San Joaquin, you know, those have a significant number of foster youth and did not have THP Plus foster care housing actually located in their county. So I'm actually at this point going to pass it back over to Amy, who's going to kind of tie all of this together for us. You know, what does this all mean, all of these findings? What are some of the conclusions and implications? So Amy?
Thanks, Simone. So yes, we're going to, you know, kind of come in for a landing here and answer some questions and talk about conclusions. So a big conclusion, and you heard it earlier, but it's really to drive it home, is post-AB 12, at least for right now, THP Plus is serving older youth with higher needs, more likely to have experienced homelessness, more likely to enter directly from homelessness, and more likely to be parenting. And we got a very good question submitted, like, will that continue to be the case as we get to that cohort of young people reaching age 21 and then transitioning into THP Plus? Will that homelessness experience reduce? I think just intuitively I would expect yes, but we'll have to see, you know, and we're not there yet. And so if you're serving youth now, that's, and if you've served youth over the last year, that is the reality you're experiencing. Again, despite this, young people made measurable gains in earnings and employment and in high school graduation. And we did not, you know, include outcome data from previous years. I would, if we have them up here, I would say that these are a little bit lower. I believe that that is in the report. But nonetheless, we were pleased to see that, you know, that there, it wasn't just flat given this group of young people who have more complex needs. So reductions in THP Plus are definitely a possibility in the future. And here's some of the factors. We have a new placement option, THP Plus foster care, as well as a quite popular competing option, which is the SILP. Then we have new discretion at the local level to use this funding for THV plus or not. And the, you know, the question is, does that add up to a possible reduction? And I think that the answer is it depends. It depends on how much value your local decision makers place on this program. And I think that's something that we can all play a role in, is are we going to see extended foster care plus THP plus add up to more, or is it really going to be a supplantation type of experience? And I don't think there's a way to answer that statewide. And that's in some ways kind of the point of realignment. It's really a county-by-county conversation that needs to happen. Another kind of big conclusion is we're delighted with the growth in THP plus foster care. But let's not kid ourselves. There's really, you know, compared to other placement options, it's hardly on the map. You can see SILPs are by far and away the most popular placement option. And I have to say, you know, as someone who was there each step along the way, that is a big surprise. Originally, the SILPs were envisioned as a placement that would not be the most prevalent. I think many hoped that many young people would continue to live in a family-like setting with a foster family home with a relative in the same way that the average 18 to 21-year-old does. It was also kind of somewhat envisioned for young people who had the highest levels of independent living skills because it does not include any supportive services. And so, but the frank reality is that AB 12 also included a requirement on the part of group homes for young people not to be able to stay there. And so where are they supposed to go? And if you look at the reduction in the ages from age 16 to 18 versus 18 to 21 in group homes, that requirement is working. The number just falls through the basement. And so the question is, in this next year, are we going to see a modulating kind of effect where we see the SILP number peel back and we see some of those young people coming from group homes who need more support getting that through THP plus, or are we not? So it'll be, I think, a very important year in that conversation. And I think it would be naive to say that, you know, we're in a realigned environment where, you know, the cost is not ever driving a placement decision, and yet we have a situation where we have two different placement options who have that have very different cost profiles. So we need to, you know, keep the focus on the individual as it is, I think, currently. But it could be a bit of a surprise if we back a bunch of kids out of SILPs and put them in THP plus at a notably different rate. And I'll maybe just stop there on that. Another, you know, big conclusion is THP plus foster care is serving the highest need young people. I personally was blown out of the water when I saw the 33% rate of young people who are, you know, current or former wards of juvenile probation system, and, you know, blown out of the water in a very positive way, because this is exactly the program for those young people. Comprehensive employment, educational, mental health, high contact. This is a great program for those young people, and those young people are finding this program. So this isn't just for your kid who's going to succeed any which way. So we were very encouraged by that. Interesting, one in four young people in the program is parenting, and so the program is finding those young people, and that was very much envisioned of what the program would be. So really together, you know, these programs are reducing youth homelessness in California. And what you see here is a, you know, July 1st, 2011, that's pre-AB 12, where, you know, for the 18 to 24-year-old population, this TAE population, we were serving as a state 1,481 young people. And then this year that is recently completed, we got a little topper, 280 young people. So we went from a little under 1,400 to, you know, 1,630. You know, not huge, but we're moving in the right direction. And in an era where there's a lot of disinvestment across the country, holding the line and increasing even incrementally is something that is notable. And then the question is, what's going to happen this fiscal year? And on that bar chart is what I want to happen. And we'll see if that comes to fruition or not, is can we move from 280 youth, which, you know, those young people are getting great quality services, to more up anywhere from 500 to 1,000 youth in THP Plus. And I think that's an open question, and it's local decisions. It's going to be whether these programs are delivering and really helping young people meet their needs. It's going to be whether we get more providers licensed whether this whole process can move forward smoothly. So, but again, we really, if we look at those together, this 18 to 24-year-old population that is the most vulnerable in California is really, we're serving more of them. And so I guess I share this in some way just to see how these programs are linked, and when they're combined, the kind of collective force of them. If in July 1st, 2014, we have 1,000 youth in THP Plus, and we have 500 youth, or 1,000 youth in THP Plus foster care, and 500 youth in THP Plus, we won't have made a difference. We will have just subbed out one for the other. So I'm hoping as a state that we can collectively, have the power and the collective will to keep our THP Plus program, in place. So where does this point us? So what's the work ahead? Definitely on the THP Plus front is the local advocacy to maintain and expand THP Plus. Often we emphasize the reduction, but there's just as much opportunity for expansion, frankly. And that is what is happening in some counties. And so it's county representatives working together with providers to educate the public, educate local decision makers about the impact of the program. And that December 10th date you see there is the John Burton Foundation is hosting, after a two-year hiatus, a THP Plus Institute, where we're going to focus on local advocacy. And we'll have more information out about that. But the idea is, for providers who, what is the Board of Supervisors? How do you influence that decision making? How do you even know kind of what this process is? Can I even advocate as a nonprofit? I thought I wasn't supposed to do that. I don't want to jeopardize my tax status. All of these kind of topics we're going to talk about so that we can have a statewide, dare I say, army of people, fighting to keep this program in place and even to be expanded. A second thing that we really need to have a conversation about in this upcoming year is the state-level THP Plus rate. So this was something, there is currently a work group that is looking at the THPP and the THP Plus rate, but this is something that we want to see move forward so that there is a kind of baseline level statewide, not saying counties can't pay more if they don't want to pay more, but that the program remains of a quality because we know that there is a solid financial base to it. In THP Plus, ongoing efforts to increase THP Plus providers and referrals, again, the education process to inform counties and providers about the process if they want to make a policy decision to reduce capacity. And then, we need to communicate. If this is happening, we need to let DSS know when this loss of capacity is experienced, whether intentionally or unintentionally. I mean, I think DSS is very committed to continuing its oversight role. But it's a big state. It's very diffuse. And, if that loss of capacity is happening, if it's a policy decision, then it's a policy decision, and we might not like it, but that's what elected officials do, is make policy decisions. If it's just accidental kind of atrophy over time and reductions kind of almost without intention, we need to know that. And it's not necessarily engaging DSS directly, but making sure that they know the state of this program, because it was a state funded program for a very long time, and they have a deep ongoing investment in it. So from here, we're going to turn to some questions and answers, and why don't I turn it over to Simone?
Thanks, Amy. So we had some real good questions submitted, real variety of questions here. One of them is, are you hearing from THP Plus providers that they're confident the model will work as well with 21 and older as it does with 18 and older, or does the framework need to change? Well, I think there's two answers to that question. I think the first answer is that THP Plus already serves 21 and up. They serve 18 through 24. THP Plus foster care actually ends at 21 with extended foster care. And so we are seeing a shift in the older youth that are accessing THP Plus. But, you know, when we talk about best practices and we talk about implementation of THP Plus years back, all of those practices and all of those, the program model was really designed for the ages of 18 and 24. So that was always, that age group was always held in mind when we talked about best practices. But the second answer is, you know, now that we serve that group more largely, or we will start to serve that group more largely than the younger age group, it's always a possibility that, you know, some of the practices will shift a bit to accommodate somewhat of a changing age group. So, you know, there's a possibility that, that things could change a bit, and that would be a great question for providers. And Amy has a comment as well.
The only comment I'd like to add is I think we do not differentiate in the program enough based on parenting use. You know, and this, I think some programs are extremely mindful and in their service of parenting youth and how different that lived experience is for that youth. But as a program, you don't see it on paper. And so if we continue to be, you know, to expand in this area as a program that's serving parenting youth, you know, we may want to step back and look at those programs that are doing it very well and understand how we can export those practices around the state so that we're looking at the children of young people in THP Plus not just as an add-on but as an equally valuable person that's being served. And I think the fact that in our own annual report we don't count the number of youth is very the number of children is very telling. We're as guilty as anyone of not really seeing them as a person to be served. And I hope that we can change that so that we're serving the young parent and we're serving the child, and that we, you know, can wrap our head around that.
That's a great point. That's a great kind of subtopic that we could probably do a whole webinar on, and we have. There's another question here that I want to address. It's, will a client in THP Plus foster care be able to move into a THPP, but I think you mean THP Plus, when they turn age 21 if they are not ready for permanent housing? Absolutely. So as I mentioned, THP Plus goes up to age 24. So once extended foster care is fully implemented next year, youth will be aging out at age 21. And if they want to transition to THP Plus after leaving THP Plus foster care or whatever placement they were in, that's fine. They have up to 24 months of time that they can spend in a THP Plus program. So they could essentially, I mean, if they really, you know, went the whole nine, they could do, you know, 18 to 21 in THP Plus foster care, and then they could do 21 to 23 in THP Plus if, you know, if they wanted to. Another question is, if a SILT placement fails for an 18 or 19-year-old, can that youth seek out a THP Plus foster care placement? Absolutely. And, in fact, we're seeing that happen already. And we hate to say fail because I know that that's not a positive word, but as we know, a SILT placement just does not provide a lot of support. And while there are youth that are ready for SILTs and they're succeeding and they're doing great, there are youth who are just at 18 not ready to live entirely independent with, you know, one visit per month from their social worker. They want they need a little more direction and a little more hand-holding than that, and that's normal. I mean, if you look at youth from intact homes, I mean, a lot of them are living with their parents, you know, up to, you know, in their late 20s or even, you know, beyond. So it's absolutely understandable that a youth may not be ready for a SILP. So, yeah, if they go into a SILP and they end up not being able to kind of hold it down in the SILP, the hope is that they would transition to THP Plus foster care. And the opposite, if they're in THP Plus foster care and they're realizing, I can do even more independence than this, I can do it, they can transition, you know, back into a SILP a year later or whatever. So, yeah, great question. Yeah, I think we'll take just a couple more questions. Okay, this is a good one. This may not be a great question, that's part of the question, but what is the likelihood that the improved outcomes we're seeing in THP Plus, even as youth have higher needs, is simply because they're older youth? I'm going to let Amy address this one.
I think, you know, the age of this group is kind of driving everything. Again, they're not having children at a higher rate. They're older, and so they've had more time to have children like the rest of the population. And so I wouldn't say that the outcomes are better for this older group necessarily. In fact, I think they're a little bit worse. But I think the big difference we're seeing is the age, the parenting use, and the exposure to homelessness. But another effect we see, and we didn't include it in this presentation, is young people who are 21 to 24, when they get into a THP Plus program, they participate for a longer period of time. So the turnover is much lower. And there's a lot of different reasons that could be, but your point is a good one. We treat 18 to 24 like one group, but an 18-year-old is very different than a 21-year-old. And a 21-year-old who's experienced a year or a year and a half of homelessness is very different than an 18-year-old who might be leaving foster care and feel like they've got all the answers in the world, you know, and I've just kind of experienced this anecdotally. So you're right. I mean, I think that it's hard to – I mean, I think the age of these participants, there's a lot tied up in that, and I think we can attribute a lot of what we're seeing to this different age. And I think, you know, it'd probably be not unwise to try and delve into the findings for the 18 to 21 versus the 21 to 24 and see, kind of what's going on in terms of outcomes to see, because I would expect them to be different. All right, Simone is going to get one last question, and then we are going to wrap up.
You know, I've got a few more questions here asking about kind of about age availability in THP Plus, really. I got another question asking if the youth can transition directly from THP Plus foster care to THP Plus. I have a question here asking if a former foster youth that's 22 can go into THP Plus. I just want to re-clarify that, you know, THP Plus goes up to age 24. Up until that age, youth can enter THP Plus. Okay, so there are other questions here, but I'm just, you know, we just don't have enough time to sort through all of them because we are past 11. What we will do is keep these questions and address them individually with the people who ask them after the webinar. So we're going to conclude here, and we just want to encourage everyone to, you know, download the annual report from the website, and feel free to email Amy or I questions that you may have, follow up from the webinar or from the report. We want to thank you, you know, for participating today, and just encourage you to stay tuned in what's going on with THP Plus and THP Plus foster care. Thanks so much.